in the beginning, our frame was, hey, the worst thing that can happen is you find out you did indeed know exactly what the full range of people in your community needed and wanted from their local information ecosystem. Anything you learn that you didn't already know is a bonus. And no shock, of course, when folks turned their process inside out and centered around the audience rather than we know what news is. We gave them a core set of community listening questions that were all about community and need and not about the news organization, and had them in effect build out a network map of different community organizations, different community stakeholders. Who do you know? Who are the first people you could talk to who you know will take a meeting with you? But equally important, when you map who's in your network, it will also expose who is not in your network that is in your community. Where are you missing relationships?
Welcome to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. Hello and welcome back to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. And with me this week is Local Media Association's Frank Mungin, the Chief Innovation Officer. Welcome, Frank.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I always like this that CIO title, innovation, because it, to me, it's like, that means I get to play with all the new toys. I get to come up with new ideas. I just like the innovation title.
Thank you. I wanted it. Innovation in my title for the longest time. I will say, be careful what you wish for, right? Because really, we all need that in our invisible title these days if you work in the news business. Innovation plus what else?
Plus whatever comes along with those things.
Yes.
Well, let's just start a little bit with kind of what you do at LMA and kind of your sphere of portfolio and how you're working to support news organizations.
Sure. I love that I'm a place in my career where I can make career choices based on mission and purpose, right? So, I joined LMA to get to work on two specific projects that were, passion projects professionally and personally. The creation and launch of the Lab for Journalism Funding, whose purpose is to train and teach local newsrooms in best practices for how to support their essential journalism, in part through philanthropy, right? To ensure that we have a healthy local news ecosystem. And then the other project, I've got a son and I read the news, and increasingly I, like hopefully most people, am concerned about our changing climate and its effects on our collective future. And so, I joined LMA to launch and lead the Covering Climate Collaborative, which is now up to 50 local newsrooms dedicated to reporting not just on the threats of climate change, but effective local responses. And we have some amazing science partners that help the journalists do that work. So those are my two main projects. I also am honored to, be in a support role with a couple of news collaboratives that support diverse publishers. Word in Black is an amazing team of 10 Black-owned and operated publishers. And then News Is Out, LGBTQ publisher collaborative that we launched last year. So I get to help out, share some of the philanthropic and business transformation strategies in those as well.
I would imagine that a lot of times with all those projects, they overlap a little bit.
Yeah, well, the biggest surprise to me from an overlap standpoint is because we also have this amazing program called the Branded Content Project that helps newsrooms generate additional revenue through branded content. And one of my colleagues, Penny Reardon, joined us as a coach in the Lab for Journalism Funding this last cohort. And she observed after going through the lab training that we've created, that the lessons in selling the value of local news really do scale almost regardless of what it is you're selling. Ultimately, what we are selling, which a different way, I'm a lousy salesperson. I'm a content guy for life. So I feel like I couldn't sell anything, but I can sell what I believe in. And if you believe in the value of local journalism and you can articulate how trustworthy, reliable, accessible, actionable information helps people navigate their life, helps them create the kind of communities we all want to live in, and helps us keep a healthy democracy, that's actually the through line, certainly in the Lab for Journalism Funding. The top line is we teach fundraising. What we really teach is how to reconnect to your core value that you as a news organization provide to your community. I mean, there's this work called Jobs to be Done by Clayton Christensen. He's better known for The Innovator's Dilemma, but Jobs to be Done is like, what is the job your audience is hiring you to do? And let's make sure we do that really well. So that's actually the through line to me across all these projects.
Yeah, it's interesting the part where you said you're not a good salesperson, but you can sell, you know, your passion, and which is the content side of things. I feel the same way. I mean, I make that joke a lot that I'm really bad, but the way you just worded that kind of tells me that I think for many of us that came up on the editorial side, that came up mm-hmm. thinking content, we were trained though not to think about how to sell it. That it was yes. bad if we were trying to sell the journalism, yes. to sell the content that we were creating. And now we realize, oh, no, we have to.
Yes.
That service is important. And that in the end really is what people want to pay to support and be a part of.
Yeah. No, I but love it's that still you call so that out. I would say there's two things there, right? The first thing, like my years in local broadcasting, I mean, you literally had the sales department on a different floor. And the poor sales folks, in hindsight, right. really, were like terrified to come into the newsroom. And we definitely made sure that they felt that way, right? When someone would dare right. enter.
That was a point of pride.
We made sure they went back there and had scary stories to tell their colleagues. And I would be the first and last to support the imperative of the firewall, right? The client content firewall. That's not what I'm talking about here. But there has been, I would say, some hubris or arrogance in journalism collectively about holding at arm's length the need to actually have a sustainable business model. So that's thing one. Thing two is if we actually worked as hard at telling our own story of value, use the skills that we have where we tell others' stories and actually communicate our own story of value to our local communities, that also winds up getting us to the same place, right? Which is people will support right. valuable information that helps them navigate their lives. And we should take great pride in how good we are at that and how important that is for communities. And if we want to have sustainable business models, which is back to, you know, at LMA, that is our core focus, is helping local news organizations sustain their work from the business side, then, you know, the sales team's not a dirty word. They're a partner that enables us to do this critical and essential work. So it is interesting to me how, like, the lanes merge on the horizon when you really think holistically about how do we sustain and support local news.
Yeah, I think, you know, I just go back to how we were conditioned not to use our skills to tell our own stories. I mean, I remember the hardest thing to do is tell a small local newspaper to brag about the awards they run. You will see faces of fear in that newsroom because conditioned not to tell our own stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's from the Lab for Journalism Funding. When we first launched in on that, we started this in the pandemic year for rather obvious reasons that newsrooms were really struggling. And we've now, you know, trained over 100 newsrooms, 3 years. They have raised collectively $22 million to support their local reporting. So fabulous results. That very first cohort, so it's a 6-month program, and we have experts come in and we guide them on a, you know, outcome-based journey of learning to put together projects that can earn philanthropic support. So we had a curriculum design and kind of had to put it on pause, because really what we learned with that first cohort is we had to spend the entire first month working with editorial leaders to get them to be okay with asking for money. We were not actually prepared for that. It was the biggest surprise, and we just had to like hit pause on all the information we wanted to download to folks, and it was more like counseling. And I literally had one publisher, I remember it so vividly, it's like, it feels like a handout. I feel like a failure. This is the
publisher
saying the quiet part, to be honest, right? To your point, saying the quiet part out loud. And I think that itself is a critical problem to be solved. If local news organizations are going to adapt to this moment, we have to think about that differently. And what we learned over several cohorts of encountering this at the very beginning is a way to shift that conversation and help news leaders change the narrative in their own head from deficit and failure thinking to partnership, collaboration on impact. So if you start, which all news people are still doing what they're doing despite all the challenges, because they start with a belief that it matters, that the work is worthwhile, and that they're making a difference. So if that's true for you, that you believe in the value of what you're contributing to the community, then a conversation with a funder is a conversation about partnering together around a shared project and mission to get even more impact for the community. That's not deficit thinking. That's abundance thinking. It's how can we be better together? And that shift actually works and helps newsrooms make the move that I think is necessary if you're going to engage with funders in this space. Not see it as failure, not see it as a handout. Funders most definitely don't see it as a handout. They see it as an investment. And talk about how you can drive impacts that matter in your community together with funders.
Right. You're talking so much there about just that shift in mindset, right? Which is, and I love your analogy of it's like having a counseling session, which is what I've told a friend of mine who I call my sales coach, but you know, I tell him he's my therapist all the time, just to get my brain to get into that mindset that what I'm doing is I'm asking people to partner. Mm-hmm. Because we both have this goal of providing this service, this important content for our community, this thing for our community, and we just want to work together. And then it's okay for me to say, can I have a little bit of money to help that out? Instead of, now pay me. Mm-hmm. I do thing, you give me money. That's a much harder thing for my brain to do. But if I can tell myself, I'm just finding a partner. I'm just finding somebody to go do this thing with me.
Yeah. Well, and you know what's powerful, once you get to that reframing of how to think about it, it also has some other benefits, which is just in the words you used, it leads you to, I'm trying to find a partner who cares about the same thing I do. It also helps you say no to partners or funders where your goals aren't aligned. I mean, this is not this journey, absolutely, this quest to incorporate philanthropy as one pillar of funding is not about handing over the editorial desk to, you know, one rich billionaire or the whims of philanthropy. It's about saying yes and no based on alignment of purpose. So I have to give a hat tip to Larry Lee, the publisher of the Sacramento Observer. In our first cohort, he coined this beautiful phrase. He called it unity of purpose. And I have this little Venn diagram. Who knew that thing from high school would come in handy, like an adult life, right? A Venn diagram. And the three circles in the Venn diagram are good journalism, community need, and funder interest. And the unity of purpose is when you find a project that addresses a real community need that editorially you believe in as good journalism. You know, journalism can make a difference on this. And you find a funder who also cares about impact in that area. That's unity of purpose. And that's a place where it makes sense to partner with philanthropy on behalf of the community.
I want to shift just a tad bit here, because you've said a couple things that I think are important for us to talk about. Is we are talking about this, seeking these philanthropic aids partners, not as the new source of funding, mm-hmm. but as a source for particular projects, for particular pieces of your business. And I think that's probably very important to say, but I'm wondering how hard that's been for you as kind of the for lack of a better word now, the trainer end of things, right? To mm-hmm. to help people realize this is the silver bullet that fixes everything. This is a piece of that.
Yes. I mean, I suppose that's another habit we have in journalism in the past 20 years. There's been a lot of disruption. So we've been through a few pivots, right? You know, the pivot to video, digital subscriptions will save us. So I understand, and certainly we see every day, the pressures that local news leaders are under. I understand the grasping for that one thing that will solve all the problems. That's not our philosophy or belief or our experience at LMA through the Lab for Journalism Funding. Philanthropy can be a new and meaningful pillar, one pillar, but you need other revenue sources as well. I always think of the Texas Tribune, you know, and they're both a kind of the gold star example, and they too, you know, had layoffs in the last year. So it proves again, there's no one silver bullet, but they have a multi-tiered revenue approach that includes small and large donors, corporate sponsorship, which is advertising. They have a robust events program, right? They have five different relatively equal sources of funding. You know, some folks may prioritize digital subscriptions, some may have more in events. You know, I think one of the things that has been a real key learning for the newsrooms going through our fundraising lab is that funders also don't want to be the only thing you're relying on. Funders typically ask you to show your own path to sustainability for a program that they may invest in to help you start. But I know specifically Knight Foundation, which is historically the largest and longest funder of journalism, sustainability is a critical question they always want to see answered in every proposal for funding. They are not looking to be constantly refunding a project that cannot earn the ability to stand on its own. So there, I would love to say we've found the silver bullet. We have not. What we have shown through the success of these 100 newsrooms is that philanthropy, absolutely, for profit newsrooms as well as for nonprofit newsrooms, I should say, can become one of the ways to sustain the really essential reporting that we do going forward.
You have collected a lot of stories from these. You said 100 so far have gone through. Are you seeing that it's working, that these partnerships are being created and they are finding paths to creating these partnerships?
Yes, and there's such a wide range of what that, I mean, I wrote a 42-page report out of the first cohort and called it on purpose Pathways to Philanthropy, because it turns out that there are many ways and there isn't just one size fits all and not one pathway. I should start with the one that isn't a pathway. We alluded to the singular mistake, right, is just chasing the money. Going after a posted funding opportunity and sort of making up the journalism in response to the funding opportunity. So I think I should start with what not to do, you know, the ways not to make the light bulb. The good news is there actually turn out to be a lot of ways to make the light bulb. And lots of folks are familiar with the marketing funnel, right? And, you know, awareness. You know, then you get the customer to have an experience with you. If it's a good experience, you can create a sense of loyalty and engagement. If their engagement is deepened and enhanced, they can go from a loyalist all the way to the point of becoming an evangelist, right? And so really over the course of five cohorts now, we have seen that there's just that kind of same funnel around philanthropy for journalism. And the core elements of building a strategic approach to philanthropy as one funding pillar is to start with local micro donor campaigns. I mean, I think of the Bernie Sanders example as the model of $5 or $10 here and there. And you know what? It's a way to begin. And it's people who just appreciate what you do. They read an article that had them go, wow, that was really helpful to me in my life. Like, would I send them $5? Would I send them $10, $25? That is the entry point, the top of the funnel. It starts your relationship of more direct support with a reader, with a viewer, with a subscriber. And then stewardship, the art of developing that relationship, can happen because you have their information. You can start sending them updates. Here's what we've done with the money that we raised. So Giving Tuesday, and then often people do spring campaigns around supporting local journalism, Free Press Day, so on. So Giving Tuesday is a great example of a way to begin, and you get to know who in your community will support you. We've seen over and over again that the next most powerful pathway is that some of those initially small donors turn out actually to have quite a bit of capacity, and they've been supporting other things for years. To your earlier point, we just never asked for support because that's not what journalists do. Well, all of a sudden you tell your story of not only the value of what we do, but educate people about how expensive quality, trustworthy, deeply reported journalism is. The Post and Courier comes to mind in Charlotte. They did this Uncovered series, and part of the, and it was a you know, two meanings in one, which is stories that were going uncovered in news deserts outside of Charlotte. And it was also their accountability reporting, uncovering, you know, misuse of public funds and so on. So in that series, part of their reporting was they told the story of how does a FOIA request work? How much does it cost per FOIA request? How many hours does it take to go? Because nobody, you know, we all know what we do. We know how hard we work. We know that we live in the communities that we serve. And so a lot of these national political divisive conversations about fake news, this and bias, that don't make any sense because we literally, our kids go to that school. We walk in that park, right, with our dog.
Right.
So it's like, we live here too. But we don't tell that story. So what was compelling to me and actually to their community about what the Post and Courier did by being transparent with what it takes to make the journalism is it helped people understand the true costs of quality, right? That, you know, the news may want to be free, but trustworthy news isn't free to create. So that's the predicate for making the ask, is it's also on us to explain why we are asking and what good journalism entails and not assume people know. So those are the entry points, and people tend to skip over those. There are local and place-based funders. We can unpack all this if you want. And then national funders. I mean, the other big mistake, other than designing a project specifically in reaction to a funding post, the other one is that everybody in journalism has probably heard of MacArthur Foundation and Knight Foundation, and probably nobody else. So the other common mistake is everybody starts with those two huge national funders, and there's only two of them, and they are focused, generally speaking, at the national level. So while that is a pathway, that is from a funnel standpoint, national funders want to see the very first question that a national funder is likely to ask is, tell me about how you have developed local support for your journalism and show me the local support and the local impact. So you're going to get sent back to square one anyway.
Right.
So the building the house, you know, progressively with a good foundation, developing some of those small donors into larger supporters, when you have that kind of support, engaging with your community and place-based foundations that also, you know, they live where you are too. They see and care about the same problems that you're trying to address through journalism. So that's sort of the building the house from the bottom up model that we coach newsrooms through.
The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. where, when you talk to people, where do you have them start? Like, what is that kind of, you know, the foundation part? We'll stick with the house theme here. You know, what is that first kind of reach out, I guess, to start getting that, and not really to get your local support, but to see who your local support might be.
Oh, that's a great question. And this is the other surprise, I'll say, from creating the lab and the curriculum, and shout out to Joaquin Alvarado, who worked so closely with the Seattle Times in really for the for-profit local news standpoint, the model for how to do this, who helped us, you know, create the curriculum. After we solved for the group therapy of asking for money, the next thing the next thing that we made the newsrooms do, and I have to say, somewhat grudgingly and against their instincts, was we made them engage in more than a month of strategic community listening. And I would love to unpack what we mean by that, because we have a very specific meaning. But the top line is that we would introduce this concept to the newsrooms, and to a one, you can guess what they probably said, right? Which is, oh, we know what the community wants. it's the equivalent of, you know, being in the editorial meeting on a Monday morning and like, hey, so what's everybody talking about? And if you look around the room, for many years, we should not be satisfied with the truth that for many years, the people sitting in that room did not represent their community, did not literally represent the diversity of the community, did not represent geographically the community. So if you've got a bunch of folks in a room who are all of a type and live in the same part of town, how on earth would they actually know what is going on today in the community? And so we, with light,
and like it or not, we all are on our beat. We talk to the same 12 people over and over. And
it's, you know, we have good intentions, but everybody's under time pressure. So you like, you call your, where did the phrase usual suspects, right? You know, that comes to mind. So with an earnest amount of prodding, the coaches in the lab make these newsrooms go into their community. And in the beginning, our frame was, hey, the worst thing that can happen is you find out you did indeed know exactly what the full range of people in your community needed and wanted from their local information ecosystem. Anything you learn that you didn't already know is a bonus. And no shock, of course, when folks turn their process inside out and centered around the audience rather than we know what news is. You know, we gave them a core set of community listening questions that were all about community and need and not about the news organization, and had them, in effect, build out a network map of different community organizations, different community stakeholders. Who do you know? Who are the first people you could talk to who you know will take a meeting with you? But equally important, when you map who's in your network, it will also expose who is not in your network that is in your community. Where are you missing relationships, likely historically missing relationships, and who can make connections so that you can get to know people in those communities, and not in that typically traditionally extractive way where you only show up in a neighborhood to cover the crime story, but to show up in that neighborhood to listen and to learn. And I have to say, to the surprise probably of newsrooms at the time, that community listening done in a strategic way as the starting point of the journey was the most transformational part of the lab experience for most newsrooms, because they all were required to, in their application to join the lab, to say, you know, to state a project that they were interested in seeking funding for. And, you know, we wanted to hear their thinking about how they came up with that idea. But almost universally, newsrooms changed their project based on what they actually heard from their community about genuine community. And, you know, I'll fast forward to the punchline, which is, if you are pitching a funder on an idea for how to serve your community, one of the first questions a funder is likely to ask is, how do you know that's what the community needs from you?
How did you
get And there? If your answer is, oh, because we know the news, what a terrific answer it is to be able to say, as these newsrooms now can do, well, we know this is what they need because we had 82 community listening sessions, and this is what people told us they most needed from us. That's powerful. And now you are grounding everything that comes next in genuine community need. You know it's got value to people. And here's the bonus, which not by accident, but it seemed like serendipity to the newsrooms. Obviously, it's part of the design, the strategic community listening. You start these conversations and now you're building relationships. And so when you turn the listening into action in the form of a project that you're seeking funding for, you already have folks in your camp who are interested in helping you execute on that reporting project. And some of them may ultimately become, and this happened over and over again in our lab, some of those folks that were part of the listening tour became so animated about the opportunity and the possibility of partnering that they became local funders for the project. So to your question, right, it actually, before you start pitching even one funder, the most important thing to do is start by turning your news process inside out, going into the community and asking folks what it is they most need and want from you, and engaging in truly authentic community listening. And that will lead you to the right kinds of projects.
It's always amazing to me how much that process surprises us. The things that we get out. I mean, look, let's be honest. All of us, because we consider ourselves experts in, you know, whatever our field, our beat, right? All of that stuff. We consider ourselves experts, and we are. But when you take a little bit of time to open that up to the outside and let people, it's always a surprise. Oh, wait, not only did I just get 25 new story ideas, new project ideas, but I also just made 17 new connections that will either be sources or they might be funding sources. And it's just, I think, and whether you're talking about, you know, we're specifically with you, we're talking about, you know, these funding sources, but even as simple as the old days, we used to bring the public in for those scenarios just to talk about redesigning a newspaper. It was still always surprising the feedback that we got and the new relationships and new ideas that came out of it. And usually, you are right, usually we were going to turn a minimum of 30 degrees from where we thought we were turning, if not 90.
Yeah. I mean, I feel in a way like I'm describing this as an epiphany, and I feel embarrassed to be framing it in such grand terms, because as you note, it's also obvious. And yet, you know, it's the oldest rule about simple doesn't mean easy. So the principle of grounding our journalism in community need and community listening is simple, and it has timeless history. In practice, everybody gets busy, everybody gets in a routine, everybody's a little overwhelmed. But what we've seen over and over again with the newsrooms who've gone through this journey in this order is how transformational that piece is. I should add one more wonderful thing that happens if you're engaged in quality local civic journalism and you start with a community listening tour. You will get something we all badly, desperately need. You will get appreciation and validation and acclamation from your community. People will thank you face to face for the work that you've been doing. And let's just be honest, right now is a pretty challenging time to work in journalism. And so that was one of the other serendipity benefits, is it was quite a morale booster for a lot of the newsrooms to get. They spend all day trying to solve problems, right? That's the nature of management and leadership. Nothing goes wrong, you've got nothing to do. Being able to have these doses of civic affirmation was actually quite helpful to newsrooms, and they found that they were able to widen the number of folks in the news organization who participated in the listening tour, you know, getting editors out into the process, right? Because of that additional benefit. So, you know, the virtues are, it's a gift that keeps on giving in a lot of profound ways. And then I guess the last thing we really try to point out to folks as they go through that journey is, hey, if this was impactful, super important not to think of this as, oh, I was made to do this for 2 months in this lab by LMA. It's like community listening should now be your always on, never done, always be listening thing, right? It is a constant source of value and benefit to a news organization as we all have to keep adjusting how we serve, who we serve, and the platforms that we deliver that information on.
I think, and you're right, it is funny that we look at these as these are all big epiphanies, and really it's just getting ourselves to redo what we've always done to go back to the basics. But it's interesting to me that really this is the same process when we want to go chase new content ideas, mm-hmm. is the same process as finding new funding partners.
Yeah.
It's all relationship building. It's all meeting the people that you cover.
And here's what I find comforting about that, right? I mean, it could just be me, but I don't actually believe that the celery soup diet is like civilization. We've been around a while. Like, I don't think there's a magic diet, right? So I like it when it turns out that the answer is fundamentals, like doing the fundamental things, like being genuine in serving, in seeking to serve your community, asking people what they need, meeting them where they are on their platforms of choice. I mean, those all seem to me to be grounded fundamental principles. So I love it when the answer turns out to be, you know, do the core things, do them well, repeatedly, and with sincerity, authenticity, and transparency. I would be much more worried if there were like this trick that seemed to be, you know, the thing.
As you move forward, I would assume that once kind of you get past that initial, you've gone through these processes, right? And you've helped them do the community listening part of it, that after that it's, oh yeah. And then things kind of move a little bit smoother, a little bit easier and quicker after that.
Yeah, we actually, that's your sense is right on. We move pretty quickly once they, you know, it's one step backwards to leap two big steps forward. And once they have that sort of raw material of listening inputs and relationships, they're able to move pretty quickly through the next key work, which is, you know, what are the elements that any good, and you're going to laugh because again, this is like, well, a sales proposal would need this, a good news project would need this. You know, we have five things that we coach them through that any good philanthropic proposal needs to address. And we literally have a template slide deck to make it easy for them to be sure that they answer each of these five questions. But once you've done authentic community listening, that actually winds up being pretty easy. And it's more like, oh, how good am I at PowerPoint? You're ready to tell the story. And in bullets, the five things are like, what is the problem you're seeking to address? How do you know that's a problem? And what is the community that's affected, right? That you can tell that all came from community listening. The third piece is the creative assignment that news has to own, which is how can you make a difference in the community through journalism on that issue? So that's your project plan. Like, tell me how you're going to move the needle through your journalism. And then, you know, again, this is from the startup world. So like, why you? So like, show me the track record of impact that you have had that makes you the right partner to get right impact and results. Because funders, you know, are hit up all the time. What they're looking for is results. Like, if you specialize in the unhoused and homelessness, you already know there's a problem. You're looking for people who can help you move the needle, right? So that, you know, show me your history of impact, which is a wonderful chance for us to actually, what we talked about earlier, take some pride and tell our own story of local impact and value. And then the last piece is, you know, what are the kinds of impacts and outcomes that are reasonable to expect if you execute this project. And then we have some bonus things, like if you put together partners, have a partners slide, because funders love to see you travel together, right? You're not the only, if you've done good, authentic community listening, you're going to find that other people are concerned about the issues that you're tackling as well. And so how are you leveraging the other resources in the community as part of your journalism? Let's say that's another, you know, on that list of don't do's, right? We have a long history of behaving competitively, not just toward other media, but everybody else. Like, oh, professors, you know, they talk too long. Oh, you know, business people right. are all about the money and trying to get us to conflict of interest. Like, no, we're all trying to, you know, find the people that you have aligned goals with and look for ways to partner. So we move fairly quickly through this sort of process of building a 5 to 6 point, not slide, but, you know, you need to address those 5 to 6 elements. And then, you know, what's great fun, at least to the coaches, it's very stressful for the newsrooms, is we end every cohort with, we call it pitch day. And we're fortunate at LMA to have a number of funders ourselves that make all these programs free for the newsrooms. Google News Initiative has been the supporter since inception for the Lab for Journalism funding. So we're able to bring in actual national funders to serve as volunteer judges. And we do a pitch day where every newsroom has only 5 minutes. If you can do it in 5 minutes, you can easily do it in an hour. To pitch their project and cover these 5 to 6 elements. So it's exciting for all of us who support them through the journey to see the evolution of sort of traditional news folks who like, I can't ask for money, it means I'm a failure, to taking some pride in the history of impact that a publication has had, you know, laws that they've changed, wrongs that they've righted, you know, people who they've given voice to be able to tell that story better, to actually go into the community and hear that they're valued, but then also learn about what the community really needs from them, and then get excited about a journalism project that's going to address that, and then get in front of funders who give them, you know, yes, everybody would like money, but, you know, the rule of pitch day is we're getting the greatest gift of all, the gift of feedback. So it's really, I mean, for me personally, it's a very rewarding journey because, you know, we're now 3 years in and collectively the newsrooms have raised well over $20 million. That's all to them, you know, that's not LMA, to fund different kinds of reporting projects. So the headline is philanthropy really can, going forward, be one way to fund important local civic journalism.
What I like about that, and I think to me, usually when we start wrapping up these episodes, I like to ask people what they're excited about, you know, in the future of the business and stuff. And I'm gonna say what gets me, what I get excited about, and I, as you alluded to earlier, it's kind of a hard time, right? It's different than it was, and we're all searching for the new answers and the new ways of sustainability. But what I like right now is what we are finding is the withering of that wall that we talked about in the very beginning, that you know, our two departments were on different floors, but that we not only can, but we have to work together, and we have to take the time to brag about the work that we're doing on the content side and the impact that it's having. And we can use those to find those sustainable funds, so that we can keep going and keep serving the community and keep providing that product, keep creating that product that we do. And I think that, to me, that gets exciting because it's better and it's easier, right? Like, if we can blend those together, that's what works.
Yeah. I recently gave my, speaking of the 5 minute window, I gave a 5 minute talk at this news event called Newsgeist, where I literally made the case along the lines of your point, is that you want to do better journalism, make journalists ask for money, which sounds completely against certainly my own, you know, history working in media, but what even I mean talking, by that, or how I got to that, is that when you get to the point of asking yourself the question, why should somebody else support my work, it forces you to be laser focused on what is, of all the stuff we could do in a local news organization, and think back to, like, go back to 1975 and all the crazy stuff that was part of a newspaper, the comics and the classifieds and the coupons and all the things that would fall out in the Sunday paper weighed 5 pounds. And there was news, right? But let's be honest, the news was only a part of it. But what is the thing that when it goes away is really, really, really a big deal in a community? It is the local information holding powerful to account. Those are the essential things. I mean, yes, it hurt our business model to lose classifieds and so on. But what really, 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 really hurts communities is when they lose trusted information sources and when they lose that advocate and champion that can hold the powerful to account.
Absolutely.
And so what I like about this idea of challenging journalists to ask for money is that it has the effect of also getting them to ask, what is it that we do for our community that is truly essential? And guess what? That is also what gets us out of bed in the morning every day to go do our work.
Absolutely. I think that is a great kind of meeting. We'll go back to your Venn diagram, right? That's where the passion and the work and all of those things meet up in the center.
Yeah. Unity of purpose.
Yeah, exactly. Frank, I want to thank you for your time today, but also your time and your passion in this project. This sounds like it is a thing that is working. It is building a lot of momentum. If people want to know more, how can they follow along with what you're doing, with what LMA is doing, or, you know, make contact?
Yeah, thank you. So local media, www.localmedia.org. Just sign up for we have a weekly email newsletter. Won't spam you to death. We'll be announcing a new cohort of the Lab for Journalism Funding through the email newsletter later in spring. It's an open call. And then also at localmedia.org, you'll find under our programs a long list of case studies that we've written of specific newsrooms and the different pathways to funding. And then also on the website, you'll find, for light reading, both that 42-page Pathways to Philanthropy report, and then, I kid you not, I just published a 51-page update 2 weeks ago called Sustaining Philanthropy for Journalism that adds new case studies and talks more about, okay, you got the first yes, now how do you keep that going? So lots of resources, all for free, thanks to our funding, GNI, available at the local media website.
I imagine that that's a project, this project of yours is one that you will be able to keep adding updates because it doesn't end.
Well, and what I love about it is, you know, we are the coaches, we aim and guide, but all credit to the newsrooms, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune has been an amazing case study example, Texas Tribune, you know, has been very generous with their learning. So really it's a peer learning model, and these newsrooms are the ones figuring out the pathway forward, and they are generous with sharing what they learn. And so what I appreciate about sort of the culture that has come out of the lab is that the newsrooms are lifting each other up. So we are honored to be at LMA, the ones who can sort of bring that information together and get it out to the wider audience so that, you know, everybody can benefit from what these newsrooms are learning.
That's great. And I think I like that you mentioned too, that it's an opportunity for these people to get together with other colleagues and you do the best ideas come out of that, right?
Yeah. Yes. Always be learning, right? I mean, once you've decided, you know, everything, you're right. Cause you won't take anything new in. And I think we have seen a good challenge promotes collaboration, right? So we can all be honest and say decades ago, local news had kind of a monopoly. We didn't have to be at our best. We could afford to be incomplete in the way we served our communities. It's tough right now in local journalism. We all know that. But an upside of that challenge from all the competition is it challenges us to be better, to do better. And once again, back to that fundamental basic premise of, what is it your community really needs that you are capable of providing well. And so, you know, all of these challenges just lead us back to recentering around our core purpose and our core value in our communities.
Yeah. Baseball is in spring training right now. It's go back to our roots, go back to those fundamental things, right? Start with your long toss, then work.
Run, catch, hit.
Frank, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. I love what you're doing, and I can't wait to learn more. I'm going to download my 51-page update right after this.
Yeah, we'll have a light quiz later. No, totally kidding.
All right, there we go.
Great to chat with you.
That'll wrap us up for this episode. We'll talk to everybody next time. Now in its third season, the News Nirvana podcast brings you conversations with visionaries and thought leaders who are transforming the way news is created, distributed, and monetized. Sign up to receive a monthly digest email with the latest episodes, behind-the-scenes content, and more. You can sign up at newsnirvana.com. The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. This podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.